Welcome to At the CR Quick Chat, conversations with community managers and social media practitioners. My name is Jim Storer, and I'm a principal at the Community Roundtable, a peer network for community managers and social media practitioners. You can find more about us at community-roundtable.com. Now on to the podcast. So I'm here today with Diane Hessen from Communispace. Thanks for joining me, Diane. I'd love to hear kind of more about Communispace and what you're doing over there.
Well, hi, Jim. Nice to be here. Communispace, what are we doing over here? Well, you know, as I always say to people, we do one thing. We basically generate consumer insights for major brands, and we do that by building private online communities. So think of us kind of as market research meets social networking. But, you know, we are in the community business. It's just that our communities are 100% dedicated to helping companies listen to their customers. And that is all we do. We've been doing it for over 9 years now, and we're just trying to be better and better at it and do it with more and more people.
And the thing that I think is really fascinating, one of the things, the reasons I really wanted to talk with you today, was to talk about your blog. How long have you been doing it now?
Well, our blog is actually, you know, there are a lot of things that we've been doing for a really long time. And one of the things we haven't been doing for very long is blogging. Our blog's probably 6 months old. Mm-hmm. So we were very late into the blogging space, mostly because of my concerns. Everybody else has wanted to do this for a much longer time.
So what were, if you can kind of share, what were some of your early concerns?
You know, I just described to you what Communispace does. So we're in the business of, you know, transforming the way that companies listen to their customers. And my early take on blogs was that they were basically monologues dressed up as social media. So certainly you could write a blog post and people could comment and interact and share ideas and build relationships, but I thought that most blogs were not doing that. And so my first experience with blogs was I decided that rather than us having one more blog, which would be one more series of white papers or whatever else, that I would spend time trying to take blogs that I really liked and make them interactive. So I was early as a commenter on blogs. And I even used to experiment with trying to be provocative and saying, gee, I just said this and, you know, whatever else. But I didn't think that as a company whose core competence was helping people listen, that it was a great use of our time. I think the second thing, which was pretty myopic of me, was I just didn't want to do it because I didn't want to have a blog be about me. You know, we've been dedicated to having our brand be largely about our clients and secondarily about our employees. So we didn't name the company Hessen Inc., and I didn't want to have a blog that was a big part of our brand that was about me. I think what changed my mind was that I put somebody into our senior level marketing job who I have tremendous respect for. She's been at Communispace for a long time. And one of her conditions for being in the job was that I just shut up about how I didn't want to do a blog and just go for it. And she really convinced me by saying that, A, we could have a blog where people interacted, and that, B, if we were a company that was putting about $1 million a year into research and next practices and, you know, lots of interesting stuff in the space, that it was time that we gave people access to what we were learning that did not require them to go to our website, register their name, and keep their fingers crossed that a PDF file would show up. So we went for that, and I said, fine, but I don't want it to be about me. And so ultimately, we created a blog that has 22 people from Communispace contribute so far. And people can find it, blog@communispace.com. We called it Verbatim, but we've got lots and lots of employees who are writing now. And I have no veto power. So, for instance, Rocky Prezeller, who is one of the leaders of our company in the youth area and who I don't think is 30 years old yet, Rocky writes a blog post every Friday morning in the voice of someone who clearly is much younger than I. He puts great music on it and, you know, kind of does the send-off on Fridays. And sometimes I will put on Twitter, I'll connect people to Rocky's blog post and just say, see, read this. This is why we hire millennials. Because it's a different voice than anything that I would have. And recently, we've had clients writing blog posts, and we also have even had members from some of our clients' communities come in. We did a special series one week last summer where we had, you know, members, like just regular consumers out there, coming in and talking about what they were doing over the summer. And it was amazing just to hear what they were dealing with, how they were handling the economy, how they were spending their summer, which was much different than my summer, and things like that. So now I like the blog because it's a collective voice. And, you know, it's not just me getting up there and saying, here are some words of wisdom for the week.
So that's fascinating. So you've got, you know, all very, you know, varied bloggers, you know, whether it's a junior-level employee, senior-level employee, you know,
yeah,
yourself, customers,
different functions, different
right,
sorts of people, and we have no editing.
That's fantastic. So what's the biggest surprise, given some of your early apprehension? What's the biggest surprise, or are there several surprises that you've seen as this blog has kind of blossomed and matured?
Well, I think the biggest surprise, this is going to sound crazy, I guess, but the biggest surprise to me is on how much our clients read it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm constantly getting emails from clients saying, I'm not going to comment publicly on your blog because I don't want to get bombarded by people calling me to try to sell me, but, you know, I really love this post. And I think a lot of it is, it's authentic and it's human. I mean, sometimes there's great brilliance and huge insight on the blog posts, and sometimes it's just a moment during somebody's day when they just notice something. So I think it's clients, as much as I always think that clients come to us because of our experience and our thought leadership, I'm surprised at how much people like the blog because it's not pretentious.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really very planned, and we're not sitting around writing a blog so that we can be expert. We're trying to just have the voices of a variety of different people and what matters to them and what comes to play just show up. So it feels a little different. You know, it's not a blog where we put all of our press releases and, you know, all of our white papers and all of our research from our PhDs. We might do that from time to time. I think people like the regular stuff, that the moment of serendipity, or, you know, the example that no one's really noticed before. So
it's interesting. So we just did a call with Community Roundtable members around the topic of creating a culture of exploration and learning, and a culture that isn't afraid to fail, specifically when it pertains to, you know, diving into social media and community. And I wonder, it sounds like with this type of blog, you're really supporting that type of culture. Can you, you know, maybe talk a little bit about your culture and maybe some of the steps that you've taken to get to that level where it sounds, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it sounds like you've got a culture that really does value exploration, and, you know, the no editing policy sounds like you're okay with failure. If, you know, someone puts something up that isn't, you know, perfectly on message, it's okay, and, you know, it's a learning experience.
Yeah, well, you know, it's been a learning experience for me because my standards are really high. So people, the bar here is very high. Our goal is to just deliver perfect work for clients. We don't always do that, but we always tell our clients that that's actually what we're trying to do. So for me, as a perfectionist, it was very hard to let go and just say, you know what, why don't we just collectively jump into the pool and see what happens. And, you know, the consequences at a minimum, we'll just learn a lot. Now, it's really easy for me to say this because we have a company of 250 people And we're lucky because we were a startup. So one of the things I learned is that, you know, now we're doing well and we're growing and we're very profitable and I think we have a pretty good reputation. But in the early days, we had a near-death experience where we almost didn't make it. We had all kinds of difficult times. And in retrospect, just like in life, our difficult times are what built our character as an organization. You know, the times when we almost didn't make it, the times when we had failures and things like that helped us learn so much about how to be successful and also about how to appreciate our success. So it's easy to say that, but when it really happens to you, and it's true, you become less afraid of messing up. So in everything that we've tried to do as we go out and venture into social media, what we've known is that we ought to jump in the pool and then really monitor things so that if we have made a mistake, we can go out with that vehicle and say, oops, we just made a mistake. We just said something that was inappropriate or whatever. But so I think the spirit of adventure around here and kind of the entrepreneurial spirit has helped with that. I mean, I'm not really worried about having a disaster. And I think most, you know, even with major brands, and you know, for most of your roundtable members, it's much easier for me to say because you know we're a B2B company. We're a smaller brand, but I think most of the disasters out there have not been that anyone's done the wrong thing with social media. I think it's been that when they make a mistake, they don't know how to recover. Mm-hmm. Not knowing how to recover could be just sitting and having lots of meetings internally and not responding right away. It might be, you know, you make a mistake on your blog and you apologize on Twitter. I mean, you don't follow the same channels. I mean, there are lots of obvious things to do, but poor recovery is usually the problem in social media. It's not that you mess up your community or mess up your blog or anything like that. It's just that people forget that if they just say, oops, how fascinating was that? You know, or it'll only take a second to apologize or whatever else. Sometimes if you mess up and you do great recovery, it's a big victory.
Right. I've heard a lot of best practices around public gaffes and how even just saying, we made a mistake, we're working on figuring out a solution.
Mm-hmm.
Just by letting the market, letting people in social media, letting anyone and everyone know that you're working on it, it's much better than going behind closed doors and trying to craft the perfect solution.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to say we're working on it because that at least, you know, shows recognition. And then you can go behind closed doors and work on it, but just letting people know that you're working on it goes a long way. So that's
absolutely. Or saying, oops, we think we made a mistake here. Now we're a big company. We got to sit down and talk a little bit about this and make sure we respond appropriately. While we are doing that, if you have advice for us, bring it on. You know, it's funny, in the early 1990s, there was a very famous study that was done. It was called TARP. It was not TARP funds, but there was an organization of the U.S. government called TARP, which stood for Technical Assistance Research Project. And they were studying service quality and issues like that. And they are TARP was the study that basically demonstrated that companies that had service failures that recovered well actually had more loyal customers than companies that provided really great service all along. That in fact, if you made a gaffe and handled it well, you actually would do better. And of course, we always used to laugh and say, well, maybe what you ought to do is to screw up all the time and that you would have more loyalty. And of course, that wasn't really what you ought to do, but it was comforting to know that strong service recovery actually could improve your reputation even in the face of a failure. And I do think it's the same thing with social media, that it doesn't hurt that I think people admire you for trying things and experimenting. And if you can, you know, if you can give somebody, I mean, I think the challenge in large organizations is being empowered enough to be able to recover. The lawyers want to have a meeting or whatever else. And most of the time, what you need to do is pretty obvious and pretty clear and will take 5 minutes. So it's worth thinking that through, but I don't know of a lot of firms who have had major damage to their brands who've done some experiments and failed, even the ones that have had a disaster.
So let me switch back to your blog for just a second, because I want to ask, you know, your advice to CEOs or senior executives who are thinking about jumping into blogging. Is there, you know, do you have a certain time commitment, a frequency, things like that, that, you know, maybe some of the nuts and bolts that they may need to think through before they take the plunge and start blogging?
Sure. What I will say is that with technology, I've never really worried about the time commitment. Because if you do it half right, technology, for me, usually makes me much more efficient. I mean, it is absolutely impossible for me to meet as many people in person that I need to know by going to a cocktail party as what I can do if I'm online. Scales your relationships. And I don't know of a lot of companies that don't need to build more and better relationships with people. So if I have to spend an hour a day using and leveraging social media, it's worth it for me because I'm probably connecting with hundreds of people in that hour. And there's no place where I could, as I've said to people before, you know,